The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of We're Done Here Pod. Please like and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening to this or watching this. This week, I'm here with one of my favorite comedians. Give it up for Chanel Ali.
Yay! You guys, keep it down. You're too loud. they're too loud on the interwebs.
So Chanel is all around rock star. She's originally from Philadelphia. Yeah. She was on MTV's Girl Code,
yeah,
I want to say.
Last season.
Yes, love that. But tell us about your comedy journey, Chanel. Tell us more about yourself.
Well, I started comedy in Philly, and yes, I did comedy there for like 2.5 years before I moved to New York.
Got it.
I knew that Kevin Hart had done like 10 years in Philly.
Yes.
And I was familiar with the grind, and I was like, yeah, I just don't want to, I don't want to do it that long, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd like to get going on this, you know. So I moved up to New York, and I just really hit the ground running. I did like the very like dream chase, like just I sold all my stuff and I moved with one suitcase. So
yay,
I got on a mega bus and I was like, I live in New York now. And I didn't have an apartment. I just paid up an Airbnb for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
So that I could really look for a space and like, you know, get the lay of the land and decide where it would be best for me to live.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the end of that year, I started to see some momentum and get booked on some festivals and started to get passed at some clubs. And
nice.
Then I opened for Michael Che at Caroline's.
Yes.
And that was a really like pivotal moment in my New York City career. And since then, you know, I've had too many comedy specials, honestly.
No, that's true.
As a guy asked me that on a date the other day. He was like, how many comedy specials do you have? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I think we're at like 6, I think, which is plenty.
Yeah, that's tons. Yeah. How long have you been doing comedy? Because it's funny because you mentioned, I found out you were from Philly, but I had thought you had always been here because I guess you came so early in your career.
Yes. I've been doing comedy like 9 years now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. So you came here pretty early. I love that. And you live in Astoria like me.
Mm-hmm.
Not to tell your business, but.
Tell everybody.
Everyone on the podcast knows I live in Astoria as well. And you actually have like one of these funny, funny jokes that I like. It's about how you found out that your grandmother is white.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's like one of my favorite jokes.
It is a joke, but it's also a true story because I, for years, did not know my grandmother was white until I went to school one day and a girl came up to me and was like, I saw you last night with this white lady at Target, and she was like getting on your case about your bra size. And just that sentence sounded so crazy to me,
yeah,
that I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I would never even engage in a conversation of that nature. But then I thought about it and I was like, well, I was there with my grandmother, but she's not white. And then I went up to her and I asked her if she was white, and she was like, yeah, she thought it was funny.
That is hilarious. But it also brings us to our topic today, because we're going to be talking about you being biracial, which I didn't know you were biracial, but that joke helps clarify that you're biracial.
I mean, technically I'm mixed.
Yeah, mixed.
Because
what do we call it? Biracial? Mixed?
I think it's biracial. It's like you have one thing and one other thing.
Okay, got it. What's the mixed date?
Oh, yeah. The mixed is like more than two, but yeah.
Okay, great.
My mom is half white, half Indian, and my dad is black.
Oh, great.
So my mom's mom is completely white.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So we're going to be talking about that. This is Emotional Wellness Comedy Podcast. So, like,
yeah.
I guess, like, how is that? Sorry, that sounds so dumb.
I think that's a great question.
My dad's Liberian and my mom's black American, which has its own issues.
I'm sure,
But cultural differences.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to hear more about your story.
It was different, I got to say, because I, on my mom's side of the family, I'm like the darkest skinned person.
Mm-hmm.
And then on my dad's side of the family, I'm the lightest skin person.
Oh, wow.
Which is like, I'm pretty brown, but they are extremely black. So I grew up more so with my mom's side of the family. And I do feel like there were times when I was like, you guys are just not always understanding the level of the things that I'm telling you about. But on the flip side, I had an uncle who was very pro-black, even though he's like pretty much 100% like Indian. He's not really.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he's like, he's been kind of like, you know, indoctrinated in the black culture.
I love a pro-black
I love
Indian.
It. I love it. And when I was a little girl, he used to tell me a lot about how people were going to perceive me.
Got
and
it.
How they would feel about seeing me with such a multiracial family,
yeah,
and assumptions that they would make. And he really prepared me to be militant and to speak my mind.
That. I love that militant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like to give him too much credit because we really don't get along. But he was right about a lot of those things. And that just gave me a very secure black girl identity.
Got it.
But I, my brother, me and my little brother, we have different dads. So he's not black at all. I have a little brother who's like technically my half brother, but is like my brother.
Yeah.
And he's not black at all.
Oh, that's hilarious. And what is he? What is he
well,
like?
Well, he's Indian and he's white.
Oh, okay. Different.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we have different dads. And when I would walk to school with him, people would ask me why I was walking with him. They would be like, why do you always walk with that kid?
I was like, who's that little?
And I would look at him like, what's wrong with you? Why do people think something's wrong with you? But I got to understand better what people perceived race as, you know, because I didn't grow up thinking like that. Used to think that you wouldn't know what someone was until you asked them. I used to think that.
That's so interesting.
Until I was 13, I thought race was much deeper than skin.
God, oh, that's so interesting. I never even thought about that. Well, I grew up in Astoria, which is a multicultural place.
Yeah.
So we would identify people by their nationality and race. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a Puerto Rican person or that Korean girl. Mm-hmm. Or like, so we were very conscious of it.
Yeah.
But I like this multi-ethnic, I don't know, coalition.
Yeah. League of Nations. Yeah.
Union Nation, United. So what type of Indian is your family?
Like from India.
Like India?
Yeah.
Okay. Like where in India? Do you know where in India?
I mean, they originate from like Calcutta.
Okay, that's
definitely
so interesting.
Bengali people.
Okay, yeah. Indians are a little, they're a little anti-black. Let's name it.
I mean, colorism, it exists across the board. We all got it.
Yeah, yeah, no, most definitely. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how was your experience with them? Because you had the militant uncle, but like, how was your mom? Was she cool or was she?
Oh, well, this is a part of the story that's important because I wasn't really raised by my mom. I was a foster kid.
Then
even that day when the girl came and told me that my grandma was white, like my grandma was visiting. She wasn't like a constant in my life at that point. So yeah, I got taken away from my mom when I was 2. And then I lived with my grandmother until I was 5. And unfortunately, I got taken away from her too.
Got it.
Then I was in foster care for a few years. And then I moved to live with my uncle, my very militant uncle, who was in the Air Force. And I moved with him a lot.
Nice.
So I never had the like cookie cutter home experience where someone nurtured me and taught me about race. But I definitely had some key players.
Got it.
And yeah, I felt like, especially my uncle, he just pointed out microaggressions sometimes. He would be like, you see how they snapped at you and assumed that you were the kid that did that thing? Mm-hmm. That's going to happen to you sometimes because you're the black girl. Or, you know, how they're not always going to pick you for this thing? Well, that's going to happen to you sometimes because you're the black girl. So you need to remind them and show them and stand up for yourself and, you know, speak clearly and help them understand that you're very intelligent, you know. So he definitely gave me a lot of lessons like that. And I think even my white grandmother, she knew the difference as well.
Okay, that's interesting. And Philly, too, a white grandmother. I don't know. Absolutely. I've been to Philly a few times. They're crazy. What type of white are they?
Italian.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah, especially them. Okay. Well, you know what? Some Italians are great.
That's right.
And Mike that does this podcast.
Absolutely. And my Italian grandmother, she, I cannot tell you how much time she devoted to my hair.
Wow.
So much time to my hair. She used to do my hair like religiously when I was little, but then throughout my life when I moved around, she would send money to get my hair done. She would find somebody to come and show me how to do something in particular. She was just, and it was very annoying to me at the time. I was like, oh my God, you obsess over my hair. But she wanted me to have the knowledge and she wanted me to feel very confident in my hair. And I now know that she was really wise about that.
No, she was.
In that family, like nobody else had hair like me. So if I would have used all of their products or just done what they had done, my hair would have been crazy. I probably wouldn't have any.
No. I mean, also, you know, black people tough on other black women are tough on other black people's hair.
Absolutely.
So that's like a whole other mind field.
Yes.
If you come to school with your hair looking crazy, like you're like the black
sheep.
She did
not play. Like if I was in a foster home, she would call the foster mom and say, I want to know what her hair is going to look like for pictures. What do you have planned?
Okay.
She would send products if she thought.
Okay, white woman.
Yeah. She really did not play about my hair. And in the summer, she would drive anywhere to go get my hair braided to make sure I could go swimming. And like, you know, she just was very aware of what needed to be done and she would snap at people if they weren't doing it.
I love that. So it sounds like you had some family members who weren't black, but they were culturally competent.
Yes.
Which honestly is not the case. I have people in my family who are mixed and like, I'm like, you know, they white mama don't know nothing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, but at least you had that. So what were some of the trials and tribulations growing up, you would say, I don't know, as it relates to your identity, or maybe it wasn't growing up, maybe it was when you got older.
My identity as a black person in a mixed family?
Yeah.
I think I felt a lot of pressure to be a certain type of black woman.
Okay.
They were always talking about education and jobs that had accreditation, like being a lawyer or a doctor. Yeah. They really would speak about my future in that way that felt very heavy-handed to me, even as a little girl. And also, I, like, conformed to it for a long time.
I can see that.
Yeah. I would, you know, I was very studious. I was straight A, honor roll. I graduated with honors. It was very important to me. But now, looking back, I was very creative, and I was much more of an artist, and I was much more into music and acting and singing. But I never felt like I had space to do that.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I actually, you know, so I feel like we're around the same age, and I feel like there's something about, like, I don't know, when we grew up, there was, like, all this, like, negativity about black women because, like, the welfare queen and stuff like that. So when our generation came, they, like, really was like, you got to go to school. Absolutely. You got to do this. Yeah. And it's true. Now black women are, like, I don't know. We have the most degrees for no reason. I don't know
just
why.
Educated, just educated, out
for,
here.
And still underpaid. Like, what was
underpaid,
all that?
What just
was
frustrated. All these books we don't read at home.
Why they do that to us?
It's a lot of pressure they did. They passed it down, you know, that American dream that it's
which
not,
is bullshit.
It's not, you know, everybody has to do their own thing.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. I just never felt room to be like a creative, like, you know, I wanted to write plays. And
I identify with
I wanted
with you.
To do stuff like that. And they were like, no. The singing stuff, you gotta.
No. I identify with that. Yeah, I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance. I wanted to be in plays. And then it was like, after school, you gotta go. I had Bible lessons, which was a real waste of time.
I can't imagine.
But. It was a real waste of time. But yeah, I would rather like have been singing or dancing or like, yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, we have the same black girl trauma, artistic
I
black
also,
girl
I also
trauma.
Felt like because I didn't grow up with my mom, there was always kind of this like looming don't be like your mom thing. And that's really heavy-handed, I think, in a lot of households, but especially when, you know, we're talking about a little black girl and they're like, you know, you just got to get your stuff together and make sure that you don't,
got
you know,
it.
Lose your
so
your...
they use your mom as like a metaphor of what not to. She's not a black woman, so it's not even in the black woman trope.
Yes.
It's like, don't be that type of woman. That's a lot of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure, and I think that's what kept me from being a comedian earlier, is that I felt a lot of pressure to, like, even when I started to transition into being a comedian and I like quit this job that I had and I started to move, I remember one of my aunts saying to me, like, I just don't understand what you're doing, and it's kind of reminded me of this period of time when your mom was just making, she was like, she was just making wild decisions, and you're about the same age as when she just started doing it. And I was like, you know, that did get in my head a little bit. And for the first couple of years of comedy, I was like, am I being like her? Am I just shirking responsibility and I don't want to grow up? But I was like, look, I don't have kids out here. I'm not out here, you know, I'm not missing work.
Yeah, you're
I'm just trying to make people laugh, and that's a really honest thing to pursue, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to steel myself and like reinstall my confidence because I felt a lot of them just putting that trauma on me. But I've had really hard conversations with especially the women in my family about the passage of trauma and how it stops here, and we're not gonna abuse each other under the guise of this is just how our relationships are. It's like, no, you don't get to talk to me crazy.
Yeah.
I never disrespect anyone, and I have plenty of good reasons to.
So you're breaking generational curses.
Absolutely.
Okay, amen to that. I like that.
I'm always texting my family. They'll text me something, and I'm like, yeah, it's therapy time. You need to go to therapy.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. So you moved to New York. When you're in your adult life, how do you reconcile that? Like self-care or like, I don't know, therapy. I don't know, people be doing stuff. I'm not gonna ask a question. I'm just throwing out words. Self-care, therapy.
Just talk about all the feel-good things you do. No, I do therapy, but also I really keep a chosen family. I think that's the thing that keeps me grounded. I have people. The other day I was on the road and I was just having a hard time on the road. I had been in Denver for a while. It was cold and I was just tired. I had been, you know, traveling and joking, and I sent a text to my friend who's like in my group, and I was like, hey, if you have a chance today, can you just send me a voice note and just like let me know that you're proud of me and that, you know, I just told her exactly what was going on with me.
Yeah.
Just very transparent, very vulnerable. And she sent me a voice note that like made me cry, and it was amazing and it was beautiful. And it's like, I've had to learn to ask people for what I need and to not, you know, be afraid of being vulnerable or admitting that I'm angry because I could just be angry, you know?
No, that's true. That is true. That is true. That's actually great, great. Yeah, that's great advice. I love the chosen family component of things. And you grew up in foster care. Do you have tips for people who may have had a similar experience? Because there's that chosen family component.
Of course, yeah.
But some people might not have. It sounds like you still had some sort of people that were looking out for you in some regard.
Yeah. I did, and that's helpful. But you need to definitely, if you can find a chosen family, you got to do it. But also, you just have to invest in people that show you love. And that love can be identified as big things or small things.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I survived. That's the only reason I'm here. Like, I'm happy that I had my grandmother at parts of my life and my uncle at parts of my life. But the through line was recognizing anytime somebody was showing me genuine love and care, whether it was a teacher, a neighbor, a friend's mom, you know, if they took a second with me or really recognized something that I thought was special about me, I really, really took note of that, and I, you know, invested in making sure that I could maintain that relationship with them. That's really the only way I survived it.
That's great advice. I need to do that in general. I was like, wait, am I invested in people that love me or invested in
some people? If people are checking up on you and sending you love, you know, and it, even in your lowest times, like, the thing that makes me feel better is checking up on other people, you know?
That is true.
And it's just kind of like a cycle. I think it's like a self-fulfilling cycle. When you have a bunch of texts going out, they're going to also come back.
No, that's true. That is true. I love that. As it relates to your comedy and being multiracial, do you see your multiracial manifesting in your adult life, or is it just like, tell us more about that.
I do things. I think I just have like very worldly opinions.
Mm.
And, I think it's really beautiful that I come from so many different cultures.
Me too, yeah.
And that I've had the chance to live in a lot of different places, experience. I've traveled the world, and also doing comedy around the world has taught me to, you know, how to relate to people, you know?
I love that.
But I don't know. I feel like the culmination of all of my ancestors' wildest dreams.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel like if they're all sitting up there and they're from wildly different parts of the world, and they're like, look, we made a black lady comedian. We all came together and made a black lady comedian, and look what she's doing. Oh, she's over here. Now she's over here. She's just, you know, I think it affects how important I think it is to like speak my mind and speak truth to power.
Yes.
And, I just think comedians, especially like once we get to a certain level, they really respect our opinions.
They really do. And some opinions don't matter.
That's right. They shouldn't always listen to us, but they sometimes do. And I just am excited to continue to go up that ladder to get to a point where I can really change things beyond just making people laugh.
You know? I love that. I love that you're sharing and that you have worldly experience. Cause you know, a lot of these comedians are not worldly at all, and it's embarrassing that they're speaking for us. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Chanel. I really appreciate you kind of delving into like the generational curses, because people don't talk that we in the black community, we call it generational curses, when you're like, I'm gonna stop the trauma.
Yes.
Because people don't really talk about that. So I think that's really, really important. And I also think the lesson of your chosen family is important.
Yeah.
And go where the love is, which is important in comedy, and comedians, we kind of tend to go where the abuse is. So what Chanel is saying is actually profound. So comedians who are listening to this, who are the bulk of our audience, pay attention to that. So I love that. Is there anything that you're not done with that you're just like loving right now?
I'm loving the way that we're using social media to talk about abuse.
Oh, really?
Like this you heard about this 50 part. Who
oh
did
my
I
God,
marry?
Tessa.
Yes, Tisa, we love it, Risa. We love it, but also just the idea that our moms and our moms' moms and our aunts and our grandmas had terrible things happen to them at the hands of people that we still know sometimes that are still active in our life. And you know what?
True.
They have been taught to shut up about it, to just not tell anybody, to never relive the details, and to move forward because you don't want to be some bitter. Blah blah blah. You can be somebody who is healed and is no longer bitter, but still can share your story.
Yeah.
And let people know that these types of abuses are still happening today. Because if we don't, it'll happen to our daughters.
Yes.
It'll happen to our daughters' daughters. So I'm not done with sharing your abuse story and even making light of it and being like, I was manipulated. I was a different version of myself. And let me show you how I got myself out of it so that you can save somebody else, because
I love that.
It's still happening.
It's still, I feel like Glory's more always does that. She's like, I was a dumb bitch in love. Like, which is true. She's like, love is like crypto. It may not be a scam.
Yeah.
But I think the Risa Tisa thing, because me and my girlfriends were all sharing that.
Yeah.
And then we know some friends who were dating some questionable characters.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of like, this is when they was dating this one.
Yes.
It's just, I love that. It's like a cautionary tale. And I don't know, why are so many men scammers nowadays? Like, we supposed to be the scammers. Like, what happened?
I mean,
what happened to the men? What happened to y'all?
I think they got really desperate.
they really did. Like, they fall. Oh, we got all these black women got all these degrees, and they're like, oh, we ain't got no job. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I'm not done with this week is Dune. I don't know if you've seen part two yet.
I haven't.
Listen, Timothy Chalamet, whatever his name is, he did it. Zendaya, she did it. Like, and then what's it, Austin Butler? He did it. Like, wow. I won't give away the story, but the cinematography is great. They're comparing it to The Dark Knight. Like, it's one of those, it made me believe in, like, you know, that comic book genre again. Well, not, I don't know what it's called, fantasy, whatever. Outer worldly, whatever. They in the desert. They on some Messiah shit.
They doing, like, different stuff.
They doing different things. Like, they got bald head people that look crazy. There was like some, like, there was too much like Hitler imagery, but whatever. I'll leave that. Whatever, the white people that approved that at the studios. But honestly, a great movie. Like, I can't wait to watch it again. And I'm a geek. So, like, I'm watching the recaps and I go on blog. I go deep into the lore. But I haven't been really excited about something in like a few years now.
Yeah, I love
it. So, I'm happy I can geek out again. So, where can our guests find you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Chanel Ali. That's Chanel like the perfume, Ali like Muhammad. Or go to ChanelAli.com to see where I'm going to be performing next.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chanel.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yes, thanks for coming on the podcast. That's been another episode. We're done here. Goodbye.